Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 19th, 2024, happy birthday, Bruce, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Interesting stuff about, so I've been struggling with this medial knee pain, right? And a couple days ago, I talked to you about how my knee pain was really bad and I have to get a hinged brace and all that. And I had some issues obtaining the hinged brace. I'm still waiting for the pharmacy from which I'm supposedly going to get it. They have to check my insurance. My PCP was wonderful and faxed a prescription in right away, but the pharmacy is kind of dragging their heels on getting back to me in terms of whether they contacted my insurance and whether it's in, to the point where I went ahead and ordered a hinged brace online. And so yesterday I hobbled around at my office. I did make it through the workday and I was okay. Hobbled around the office wearing, I taped my knee and put just a neoprene brace above it, which is not as much support as I would have gotten from a hinged brace. And that's how I was all day. And then I started to notice towards the end of the day, the knee felt a whole lot better. It didn't hurt nearly as much. So I left everything in place, finished my day, and got home at around 8 o'clock at night and came home, took off the brace and realized my knee is much, much better. It doesn't hurt to walk on it. This is crazy. So I did a little bit of restorative stretchy yoga with modifications to protect the knee. You know, just a half an hour of some stretchy yoga, nothing too crazy, just to relax me after my workday like I usually do. Still fine. I didn't sleep with the brace on. I still have the tape on. Still fine. Cannot believe it. So today my knee is fine and I'm choosing not to ride my bike today. I'm nervous to go back on the bike. So I'm going to give it some time. I'm not sure how much time I'm going to give it, whether I'm going to wait till the weekend or wait until next week or wait until I get to PT, which isn't till a week and a half away. Hopefully it's because I had enough anti-inflammatories, rest, and compression, and that's just what happened. And hopefully it's not that there's Lyme disease in there, and the nature of Lyme disease arthritis is that the symptoms come and go and travel, and because it sort of spontaneously felt a whole lot better. That makes me happy and also a little bit nervous. However, today I don't have any obvious Lyme symptoms. I'm not shaking. I don't have brain fog. I'm not excessively tired, so I don't have any acute Lyme symptoms. So maybe the inflammation just went down. We also have to remember that a couple days ago I had acupuncture, and the acupuncture treatment may have taken. It did its thing. And you know, when you get acupuncture, the acupuncture isn't just effective right when you're getting the acupuncture. It's also it's rearranging and assessing your meridians and helping your meridians to flow in a more helpful way. So if you get the chi moving, stuff like that can happen. So and the effects of the acupuncture will be available over several days after it happens. So that may have happened as well. I may check in with Nicole to see if that's a thing, that all of a sudden 2 days out you feel a whole lot better, like you're a little bit worse the day before and then you suddenly feel better. And I know what she's going to say. She's going to say, yes, of course that's a thing, because I know that's a thing for chiropractic and lots of other healing modalities, that you get the healing modality, you may feel a little bit worse because your body is stirred up and your body goes after the thing that you're addressing, and then you get better. You have a healing crisis and then you feel better. This is a thing in natural medicine. The body does amazing things to self-heal, and then you get better. And again, if this is if there is medial collateral ligament involvement in this injury, the medial collateral ligament has a lot of circulation. So medial collateral ligaments can heal, and they can heal without surgery. Even meniscus tears can be helpful. If the meniscus tear isn't too terrible and you're not completely incapacitated, you can live with a meniscus tear as long as you're not inflamed and in pain. If it's excessive and you're bone on bone, that's another story. But we're hoping I'm not there. That's why I really wanted to get some physical therapy assessment, somebody to actually assess the knee in real time. Not me going on YouTube and looking at physical therapists who are very helpful, I must say. They definitely have helpful exercises on YouTube, but they're not specific to me because these physical therapists have not assessed me. So I need me to be assessed, and I'm nervous to ride my bike before I get assessed, and that's a long way out. Fortunately, there's no actual club rides until for a few weeks out anyway, so maybe I'll be able to ride by then. Maybe I'll decide to try a short ride on the weekend. I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm going to do at this point. I do have chiropractic before the weekend, and we'll see how that goes. So that's what's going on. I'm taking great anti-inflammatory supplements as usual. I'm continuing to take modified citrus pectin for the possible chronic Lyme and Bartonella, which we're hoping is calm right now because I'm not symptomatic. And I'm taking SPM, specialized pro-resolving mediators, that's what SPM stands for. Specialized pro-resolving mediators are extracts of fish oil, and one of the things that's helpful in fish oil are compounds called resolvins, and specialized pro-resolving mediators are resolvins. And resolvins help to resolve inflammation. So I'm taking those. And so hopefully that's something that's helping me. I'm taking actual fish oil as well. I'm taking black cumin seed oil and MCT oil and borage oil. So I'm taking a bunch of oils. I'm also taking curcumin and I'm taking quercetin. And those are all things that reduce inflammation. And then, of course, the proteolytic enzymes. And these are to chase after spike proteins and keep inflammation down for Lyme. But, of course, it's going to help with generic inflammation as well, including the inflammation in my knees. So I'm taking proteolytic enzymes like natokinase, as well as some protease enzymes that are part of a comprehensive enzyme that you usually use for digestion. So you take it away from food and it gets into your body and then it helps to reduce inflammation there. So I'm doing all these things, and it may be that it just at that point it really helped. And I'm just wondering if, even though the neoprene brace wasn't ideal, it didn't provide as much stability side to side as I would have liked, but it did provide enough compression to get the critical inflammation out of the area, and that may be helpful. And then, of course, the tape too. I'm a big believer in kinesio tape. I just really like to tape myself when something is not feeling right, especially my knees. I feel it provides support. Nothing else, it provides me with security, but I think it does help to provide support. So I'm very happy with it. All right, and so that's what's going on with the knee. Ron is still struggling. He came back from teaching a class this morning, and he was still huffing and puffing. He's about 90 days out from finishing taking his Evolocumab, and he's still not back. I mean, he was able to do the Best Buddies ride, but it was a struggle, and he is considering doing a short rail trail ride this weekend. So we'll see what happens there. All right. So I heard from my beloved colleague Mariah Hinchy, who has helped me greatly to deal with my tick-borne illness. So I'm very grateful to her. And if you need your tick-borne illness dealt with, I can help you, but so can she. Very, very helpful. Mariah Hinchy, her practice is Dow Vitality over in Hebron, Connecticut. Anyway, she reached out to me because she wanted me to help to promote the Healing Lyme Summit. So here's what the Healing Lyme Summit is. The Healing Lyme Summit, you can participate and watch the Healing Lyme Summit from June 4th through June 10th, 2024. It's a virtual summit that helps with building a community so that you don't have to go through Lyme disease alone. So it's for people who have Lyme disease and anyone who supports them, whether you're a practitioner or you're a caregiver or you're a loved one. So anybody can benefit from watching this summit. It is a virtual summit that helps with building community. It's about connecting, sharing experiences, and finding hope. It features experts on diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease, such as my beloved colleague Mariah Hinchey, the esteemed and long-practicing Richard Horowitz, MD, and Alex Chesney, ND, and many more. If you're interested, you can go to https://drtalks.com/Lyme-summit/2024/. That's drtalks.com/Lyme-summit-2024. You can watch each day at no charge. Each new day starts at 6 p.m. So for 24 hours, starting at 6 p.m., you're going to have a series of talks, and then the talks will flip to the next day at 6 o'clock p.m., starting on June 4th, as we said. So there's also a way to watch the entire series at your convenience that's explained at the website. So that's the Healing Lyme Summit 2024, June 4th through 10th, 2024, at drtalks.com/Lyme-summit-2024. So drtalks.com, if you go there, there's all kinds of talks that you can listen to, and it's not just this one. So it's very interesting. If you go to the website, you can see all kinds of doctor talks, and all the doctor talks have lots of doctors talking about all kinds of healing stuff. It's really great. So you might want to consider having a look at it. The more information that you have about treating Lyme disease, whether it's acute or chronic or whatever is going on with you, the better off you're going to be. All right, and so just make sure that when you get out there, you're checking your body for ticks. If you do find a tick, make sure you have, you can get tick tools that you can use that grab onto the tick at the mouth and you twist off and pull. You don't just scrape it off and you don't burn it and you don't stick a needle into it to let go. If you stick a needle into it to let go and the tick does let go, before it detaches from you, it can regurgitate saliva from its mouth containing lots of tick-borne illness in it. So you don't want to do that. You want to quickly pull the tick off by twisting and pulling. And you can do that with a pair of tweezers, an ordinary pair of tweezers. And you can also get specialized tick tools that do that. And you can find those online. There's various ones. And then once you have the bite, if you know that you have a tick bite, then it's a good idea to have andrographis tincture around and some clay that really draws. So bentonite clay, French clay are both good ideas. And you can mix the andrographis tincture with a little bit of the bentonite clay to make a paste, and then put that on your bite, and then put a Band-Aid over it and leave it on there. And so that's going to help to draw toxins and tick-borne illness out of the bite if there is any in there. And good idea to leave it on overnight. And you can either do the paste. It's a good idea to do the paste if you have the clay. If you don't have the clay, then you can just have andrographis tincture. Take the andrographis tincture, rub it onto the bite, and then get a bandage, a sticky bandage. And on the pad of the bandage, rub some andrographis tincture, put it over the bite, and then leave it there at least overnight or for as long as it can stay on. And so the andrographis will hopefully, if there's Lyme disease in there, it'll kill any organisms that are in there. And if you get bitten, then it's a good idea to, at least for a couple of, maybe a couple of weeks, just to make sure you don't have symptoms, is to take a tincture. And a tincture is going to have stuff like equal parts of Japanese knotweed, cat's claw, cryptolepis, and then depending what you have, you might have other things around. It could be Sweet Annie, it could be Hotunia, it could be ashwagandha. So there's a few options there. But the big three to take when you're first bitten is Japanese knotweed, cat's claw, and cryptolepis. I'm really a big fan of cryptolepis because I didn't know much about cryptolepis until this round of Lyme disease that I started studying about when I came down with symptoms in December. But cryptolepis is very, very impressive because it is known to fight all of the forms of Lyme disease. So whether you're in the active form, where the active reproducing spirochete, or it's a stationary form where it's stationary, it's not reproducing, or if it's the, which I believe is the L form, or if it's in an encysted form. So Lyme disease, when it sees antibiotics, the spirochetes are very clever. They will make a difficult to permeate barrier around themselves and make a little cyst, which you can't get through with ordinary antibiotics. You usually have to use antifungals to get through it. And Cryptolepis will go after those. And also Cryptolepis will go after stuff that's behind biofilms. And if you're concerned about biofilms, then you go after your proteolytic enzymes that we talked about. So protease, serrapeptase, lumbrokinase, natokinase, all of those things can be helpful. And these are good things to have on hand if you live in Connecticut, because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when you're going to get bitten. The ticks are definitely out there. I'm so grateful that Ron finally got us a lawnmower, because we were out a lawnmower, and he found an inexpensive rechargeable lawnmower, which he was so proud of, and he mowed around my flowers that were in the yard. The place where you see a lot of ticks is the transition zone between your lawn and the woods, if you have woods around your house. That's where you see a lot of ticks. Ticks love to live in... They love damp environments, so if your grass is cut short, the sun can get on the grass and the ticks will die. If you took a tick and you put it on the table and just let it sit there, it would die. It needs moisture. It needs moisture and cover and cool. If you heat up a tick and dry it out, it can't live. But ticks will live in tall grass, and it will live in damp grass. It will live in wood piles. It will live in leaf piles. So all of those places are concerning for ticks. If you're cleaning out your garden, you have to be really careful. And if you are, doing a lot of gardening and spending a lot of time outdoors, and you like to crawl around in the dirt for whatever reason, and if you like to go hiking, it's a really good idea to wear tick repellent. And it's up to you if you want to risk using some heavier tick repellent that has like DEET in it. And in some circumstances where it's heavily ticked, there's a lot of ticks, you might want to use that and then just take milk thistle and so that your liver doesn't get harmed by the DEET. You can get stuff with Bio-UD in it. Bio-UD is an extract of tomato that it's supposed to work as well as DEET, and if you can find products that have that in it, that can be helpful too. And you can also get herbal essential oil tick repellents that have things in it like citronella and rose geranium and rosemary and other essential oils that are repellent to ticks. And they can work pretty well, especially if you use something strong. You're going to smell like essential oils, but I think it's worth it. Like if I like to do yoga in my yard, I'll spray myself down with this smelly essential oil bearing tick repellent, and then I come inside and Ron's upset because he doesn't like the way it smells. So when I come indoors, I just wash it off as best as I can, and then it'll come off in the shower, and then do it all over again when I go back outside. So important to do that. So once again, Healing Lyme Summit 2024, June 4th through 10th, 2024, at drtalks.com/Lyme-Summit-2024. All right, so let's go back to talking about natural treatments of hypertension. We're talking about how to help you with your high blood pressure if you have it. And let's go, we have a list of things to talk about regarding that. So let's get down our list. Okay, so we're talking about various supplements, and I'm going to do a whole piece on supplements in a little bit. But omega-3 fatty acids that we talked about, you're going to find that in fish oil and eating fish. Whey protein tends to lower blood pressure, and probably because you have some very easily absorbable amino acids in whey protein. If you're not dairy intolerant, you're not specifically intolerant to whey, whey is a great protein to use, W-H-E-Y, because it is so full of lovely amino acids. It happens to be high in branched chain amino acids, which can help you to rebuild muscle tissue. But it also has things like tryptophan in it and tyrosine, which help you to build neurotransmitters. And when you have adequate tryptophan, you have adequate serotonin. Serotonin tends to be calming. If you have good serotonin function, you're going to tend to be calmer, and your blood pressure is going to tend to be more relaxed. Magnesium, of course, you can take magnesium supplements. You have to be careful how much magnesium you take, because if you take too much magnesium, it'll come out the other end. It is hygroscopic. It will draw water to it. It'll help you go to the bathroom better. At potassium, same. You know, if you take too much potassium, that can happen as well. And you can get magnesium and potassium if you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. You'll get your magnesium and potassium that way. So if you are taking magnesium at a certain dose and you find that you're getting loose stool, you're probably getting enough magnesium from your daily food. And so you can back off on the dose that you're taking. And so I have to be careful of that, because I definitely eat a lot of green vegetables, and I eat nuts and seeds, and I eat other foods with magnesium in them. And so I have to dial in my magnesium dose so it doesn't become excessive. And so far, so good. Potassium, I do take a little bit of potassium a day. I mean, I'm taking 99 milligrams of potassium, but potassium is a funny supplement, because, you know, unless you're taking, you know, a pharmaceutical strength potassium where you're getting, you know, 500 to 1,000 milligrams of potassium, you can really get a lot of potassium from produce. I mean, coconut water, a cup of coconut water has a good 600 to 700 milligrams of potassium in it, and a banana has over 400 milligrams of potassium in it. So if you're eating a variety of fruits and vegetables in a day, you may not need to take a potassium pill. I take potassium citrate because I have a history of kidney stones. I had one non-obstructing stone that's been living in my kidney for I don't know how many years, at least 5 years, because that's when it was discovered. And it's still there. It's not doing anybody any harm. And I haven't had any more. I had the one kidney stone in 2019, and I haven't had one since, thank goodness. And, you know, you prevent kidney stones by drinking lots and lots of water, which I try to do. Let's do that right now, okay? So you make sure to stay very hydrated. And so, because the more you dilute your urine, the less stuff that can precipitate out in it. And magnesium will compete for solution with calcium. So calcium will tend not to precipitate out of your urine if you have adequate magnesium around. Citric acid also helps to protect that from happening. So I'm actually taking potassium citrate. I'm not taking magnesium citrate, but I'm taking potassium citrate. And I also have lemon in my tea, and we eat lemon in various foods and sometimes lime in various foods. And so obviously lemons and limes have citric acid in them, and citric acid helps to keep calcium in solution, so you're less likely to get kidney stones. All right, and so back to blood pressure. So alcohol can raise your blood pressure. There is a 2020 review who found that consuming 30 grams or more of alcohol seems to increase your heart rate for 24 hours. Your blood pressure tends to fall for the first 12 hours, but then goes up. So a standard drink has 14 grams of alcohol. So two drinks and you're near that 30 grams or more. So two drinks a day is going to tend to raise your blood pressure. Limiting alcohol to two standard drinks a day for men and one a day for women is going to help to keep your blood pressure down. In terms of cancer risk, for men it's one drink a day, and for women it's one drink like four times a week. So remember that a drink, a drink meaning 14 grams of alcohol. There is 14 grams of alcohol in one 12-ounce beer, in 4 ounces of wine, in 1.5 ounces of 80 proof spirits, or in 1 ounce of 100 proof spirits. So 14 grams is, that's what a standard drink is. That's what they're talking about. And it varies how much alcohol there is depending on what you're drinking. Check your caffeine intake. If you have 1 to 3 cups of coffee a day, you're generally not going to have a rise in blood pressure. Okay, so if I have high blood pressure, it's not from consuming caffeine. I wonder about that. I mean, if you're super sensitive to caffeine and you don't break it down well, and it tends to hang around in your body longer than other people's, I wonder if it still raises your blood pressure. So I can't possibly consume, I barely can consume a whole cup of coffee unless I have gotten a lot of exercise that day. And so I tend to sip on little bits of coffee and little bits of tea, and it doesn't amount to even a whole cup in a day. I can do a little bit, but if I do too much, I just can't break it down. So I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine, which you may be as well, or you may not be. If you're that lucky person who can drink a cup of coffee and then take a nap or go to sleep at night, then you're a fast metabolizer of caffeine, and it's less likely to affect your blood pressure when that happens. Your blood pressure can go up if you consume a lot of coffee or a small amount. That's what we said, a small amount if you're not used to it. So energy drinks may also increase blood pressure. So if you're doing energy drinks, you know, that the commercial energy drinks that you can get at the grocery store or at the convenience store, they can raise your blood pressure as well and also increase your risk of cardiovascular problems. Generally, experts say that energy drinks aren't that great for you. And especially if you're a minor, and especially if you have some kind of health condition also. All right. So if you find that caffeine is affecting how you feel, you might want to try decaf. So remember that decaffeinated coffee has caffeine taken out. It depends on what you're drinking. If you're doing decaffeinated coffee that's not organic, it may be decaffeinated with chemicals like methylene chloride, which is not good for you. You want Swiss water decaffeinated coffee, and Swiss water decaffeinated coffee is going to tend to have less caffeine in it than chemically decaffeinated coffee. So it's going to have less more than 1% caffeine. If you're really sensitive, you still might be sensitive to the amount of caffeine that's in decaffeinated. So decaffeinated does not necessarily mean caffeine free. It can mean virtually caffeine free, and there can be so some caffeinated decaffeinated beverages, like if you go to certain chain cafes, you'll get a decaffeinated coffee, and it will have as much as 15 to 20 milligrams of caffeine. And your standard cup of coffee has more like 200, depending on how strong it is, 200 to 400 cups of milligrams of caffeine in it. So if you're very, very sensitive, which I have had decaffeinated coffee at stronger caffeine places that has probably 15 to 20 milligrams of caffeine in it, and I'm affected by the caffeine. If I eat too much chocolate, I can be affected by the caffeine. Like if I ate too much chocolate before bed, I'll have trouble sleeping, or I'll wake up in the middle of the night. That's how sensitive I am. And chocolate isn't going to have nearly as much caffeine in it as a cup of coffee or even a cup of tea. And people are very sensitive, have to watch their chocolate as well. And that includes things like Nutella. So we have to be careful of stuff like that. So caffeine, if you do too much of it, depending on how well you metabolize it, can raise your blood pressure. So just be aware of that. All right. Drink water. If you're dehydrated, you're going to tend to have higher blood pressure. So you know that one of the ways that they help you to have lower blood pressure is to make it so that there's less volume of blood going through. So the way they do that is by giving you diuretics. So hydrochlorothiazide is a diuretic, and furosemide is also a diuretic, and they work on the kidneys to help you to excrete more water. Well, guess what else helps you to excrete more water? Water! So you know what happens if you drink a lot of water. You have to go to the bathroom more. So you're better off drinking more water than taking a drug and going to the bathroom more. Because if you drink water, then your body's going to work more efficiently. Everything in your body is going to work more efficiently. Your heart will work more efficiently. So if your heart works more efficiently, it doesn't need to pump as many times, and it's going to get more blood out of it. Because with water, you're increasing your blood volume, not decreasing it, but you are also asking your liver and kidneys to do more work, and they'll have more substrate to do their work with. So the liver needs water to do a lot of its detoxification processes, as does the kidneys. Obviously, the kidneys does as well. So the kidneys and liver are going to work more efficiently, and they're going to help you excrete more water if you drink more water. And much better to drink water than to take a drug. There is research that suggests if you have 550 milliliters water within 2 hours of waking up and another 550 2 hours before bedtime, that can help decrease your blood pressure. And I definitely do I may do that because I tend to be very thirsty in the morning. And in the morning, if I have water on my nightstand, I will drink the water. And then I go in the kitchen and I have some supplements. And when I have the supplements, I have water that has some herbs in it and my modified citrus pectin. So I drink 8 ounces of that. So 8 ounces is about 250 milligrams. And so 500 milligrams is about a pint. So I probably, and then I have a quarter cup of some kind of juice. And right now I'm going through a bottle of beet turmeric ginger juice. So I'll have that sometimes. And by the way, the beet turmeric ginger juice directly can lower your blood pressure because all three of those herbs can help with blood pressure. So I'll do a little bit of beet turmeric ginger juice, or I'll have a green juice and just a quarter cup of that. And then I drink water. I sip on water throughout the morning. And so, and then, you know, in the evening, I will have some water with dinner, and then I tend to drink during the night when I get thirsty. And so I'm doing that. Anyway, so just making sure, and if you don't want to like count your milliliters in the morning and count your milliliters at night, one thing to do is to get a nice glass container of water that you are determined to finish over the course of the day. And, you know, make sure it's, if you can do, if it's a 32 ounce container or even a 64 ounce container and you can finish the whole thing, that's great. If you can do 32 and then refill it, that's great too. And just make sure you sip it through the day and you get it all down. And you can put herbal teas in there. You could put herbal tea that helps to lower blood pressure. Then gentle things like hawthorn and hibiscus and linden and lemon balm and passion flower and motherwort, and any combinations of those can help to lower your blood pressure. Anyway, so drinking water has been studied to help to lower your blood pressure and help you in many, many other ways. Of course, taking prescription medication will lower your blood pressure. And if your blood pressure won't come down with natural means, you may have to go to the doctor and get a prescription. And there's a lot of different prescriptions that you can take. I haven't had good luck with those. I took a blood pressure medication, and I woke up in the middle of the night and nearly passed out. So it lowered my blood pressure too much, and it was a very small dose of blood pressure medication. So some people can take them. A lot of people can take them, and a lot of people do. My mother takes blood pressure meds. My sister does as well. At this point, I'm not, because I just can't seem to tolerate it. And, you know, I already have autonomic dysfunction to an extent. Today's a good day. I'm feeling pretty good today. And so I'm afraid to take blood pressure meds because I don't want my blood pressure to go down too low. And I can get my blood pressure down. I drink Tulsi tea at night. I'm taking a lot of herbs that help to lower blood pressure, which we'll talk about. And I drink a lot of water. So we're going to drink some more water right now. I wonder if I'll get through this glass before the end of the show. So there you go. So those are some things to help with blood pressure. So here's some more specific supplements to help with blood pressure. Let's go to there. So this is always fun to talk about. All right, there's lots of lovely stuff. We already talked about magnesium. Magnesium is used for many, many bodily functions. It is used for blood pressure regulation. One of the things is if you have inadequate magnesium, your muscles are going to tend to be tight. And that includes all of the muscles in your body, including your heart and including your arteries. So if your arteries are tight, they're not as elastic, they're not as resilient, and your blood is going to go through, and your blood is not going to be, your blood vessels are not going to be as resilient if there's not enough magnesium around. So getting magnesium will help with that. Also, if you're constipated, your blood pressure is going to tend to be higher. If you're not excreting the things that you need to get out of your body, you're going to be reabsorbing things that your bacteria is going to work on, and you'll be reabsorbing toxins that will tend to tax your liver and your kidneys and raise your blood pressure. So if you take magnesium, you have adequate magnesium on board, you're going to tend to have a calmer colon, that you're going to have more elastic peristalsis, better peristalsis, so you're going to send stool through your colon at a more even rate, and it's going to tend to lower your blood pressure. And magnesium also it draws water to it, so it helps you to excrete stool more readily. So there were a lot of randomized studies showing that magnesium, when you get in like 365 to 450 milligrams of magnesium over or almost 4 months, it significantly reduces blood pressure in people who already have chronic medical conditions, which is great. There's another study that showed that greater dietary intake of magnesium can protect against high blood pressure in the first place. And every 100 milligram daily increase in magnesium was linked to a 5% reduction in high blood pressure risk. So one thing we will sometimes recommend to people is to take magnesium to bowel tolerance. So if you can get in, 1,000 milligrams of magnesium is a lot of magnesium. But if you can get there and you don't have loose stool, you may need that magnesium. So one thing you can do is gradually increase your dose of magnesium. I don't recommend taking magnesium oxide because magnesium oxide is not well absorbed. If you're trying to lower your blood pressure, one of my favorites is magnesium glycinate. Magnesium taurate would also be, those would be two good ones for lowering blood pressure. Magnesium orotate has also been studied well for lowering blood pressure. So if you can ramp up your dose to a point where you keep taking an extra pill until you get some loose stool, and when you have loose stool, then you back off to the dose that you took the day before you had the loose stool, and that's your dose. And so, and your magnesium needs will vary with how much activity you're getting. You need more magnesium if you get a lot of physical activity and less if you don't. You will need more magnesium if you eat too much sugar, because magnesium helps to regulate blood sugar. And if you're anxious, you may have a higher need for magnesium. And your magnesium needs can vary from day to day. So you may have some loose stool one day and not another day. So if you go on a very long bike ride, you need more magnesium that day than the day that you just sat in the office all day. So I'm kind of talking about myself. But if you get, say you're going to go out and work in the yard all day, if you're working in the yard all day, you're going to need more magnesium than on a day when you just, sat around and relaxed. So just be aware of that. And you do get magnesium, and you also, your need for magnesium pills is going to be less if you consume foods with magnesium. And the big food that has magnesium in it is anything green. Because anything green has chlorophyll in it, and chlorophyll, it has the same structure as hemoglobin, which is in all of the red blood cells in our body. Hemoglobin has iron in the center of it, has a heme ring with iron in the center of it that runs around your body and picks up and drops off oxygen at various parts of your body. And magnesium basically does the same thing, except it's a heme ring with magnesium in the middle of it. Chlorophyll is a heme ring with magnesium in the middle of it. So when you consume anything with chlorophyll in it, you're going to consume a lot of magnesium. So if you're going through a lot of greens, or if you're doing green smoothies, you may have to watch how many magnesium pills you take, because you will get loose stool from that, and it's because you have too much magnesium on board. So don't feel like you have to take a lot of pills if you're eating a lot of green stuff, and also nuts and seeds have magnesium in them. So people with high blood pressure tend to have lower levels of vitamin D. So let your doc measure your vitamin D. I like to see somewhere between 35 and 45 nanograms per milliliter in men, and around 50-ish nanograms per milliliter in women, because I noticed that women with lower vitamin D, they don't have as good mood as if their vitamin D is a little bit higher. You don't need to be at 60, 70, but around 50 is good if you're a woman, and 35 to 45 is good for a man. And when people tend to be on the lower end of that, I tend to supplement them. And it's vitamin D, you're going to say, well, I go out in the sun, I'm going to make plenty of vitamin D. It's hard to do in New England because the sun rarely gets high enough in the sky for you to make vitamin D. It has to be a sunny day, and you have to be mostly uncovered. So on the summer solstice, which is coming up soon, on the summer solstice, the sun is only at 50 degrees above the horizon for 5 hours. So that's 5 hours surrounding 1 o'clock p.m. on either end of 1 o'clock p.m. And the rest of the year, it's less than that. And for 6 months of the year, it never makes it there. So most people in New England need to take vitamin D supplements to get their vitamin D at a decent level. And that's why you see certain conditions more readily in New England. So you see more anxiety and depression. You see more immune issues, more autoimmune issues. When there's certain illnesses that occur at higher latitudes because people don't get adequate vitamin D. Indigenous people who eat indigenous diets tend not to have these problems because they eat animals and they eat the whole animal. So they're going to get vitamin D from the organs and tissues of the animals that they eat. So that's why you're not going to see anxiety and depression in Inuit peoples and Inu peoples who live north of the 60th parallel, if they're eating an indigenous diet, if they're eating seal and they're eating whale and they're eating lots of fish and they're eating the whole animal, they're going to get vitamin D from those animals. And so if you're eating an indigenous diet where you're eating a whole animal, you're going to be more likely to get vitamin D. And the thing with people in industrial societies, we tend not to eat the whole animal, which is why supplements with whole organs in them are becoming popular now. People find great changes and transitions taking supplements, like taking whole liver supplements or whole gallbladder supplements. Or I'm seeing patients with menstrual difficulties take liver supplements and get a lot better, and have their acne resolve and stuff like that. So if you take supplements like that, sometimes you might not need to take a vitamin D supplement or a vitamin A supplement because you're going to get it from those supplements. So, and if you eat liver regularly, if you eat organs regularly, you have to be careful if you're eating organs. You want them to come from a grass-fed and finished animal, or a free-range, if you're eating chicken liver, you want to make sure it's an absolutely pristine free-range chicken that's basically not getting feed, but that's running around and scratching, or it's getting very organic feed. And you can get your vitamin D, your fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin D and vitamin A that way. But most people don't do that. I know I'm probably guilty of that because I don't eat liver. I don't eat organs. I eat a largely plant-based diet and supplement it with some animal protein. And the animal protein I go for is chicken breast, turkey breast, and fish. So I'm going to get some A and D from my fish, but probably not enough. And, you know, I measure my vitamin D regularly and I take vitamin D supplements. I also take a vitamin A supplement. With those, there was a review of data of over 300,000 people who found that those with the highest vitamin D levels had a 30% reduced risk of high blood pressure compared with those with the lowest levels. So you check and you supplement regularly. Then there's B vitamins. B vitamins may help you reduce your blood pressure. How nice. So I take a B complex every day, again, because, you know, I'm stressed and I probably chew through my B vitamins pretty quickly. So I'm taking a B supplement, and I find for myself that I need to take a B complex that's food based. So when it's a food based supplement, it doesn't bother my stomach. If I take a B vitamin supplement, even if it's, in all of the methylated forms, in really good forms, I don't tolerate it well. But a food-based supplement, you know, and there's a couple of brands that carry food-based supplements that they're in a food complex, no problem with those. My stomach works with them very well. It has a nice complement of B vitamins. I also supplement with extra vitamin B12. And I have an MTHFR anomaly. An MTHFR is methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase. I have one copy of the C677T anomaly, which means that I am a little bit inefficient at converting my folic acid to activated folic acid. So I take some folic acid that's been activated. And I also take methylcobalamin, which is activated vitamin B12, and some pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which, all of these things are activated B complex that are in the methylation pathway, and they're in my B complex. So if you have an MTHFR anomaly, then it's a good idea to supplement with some B vitamins that are in the methylated form. And vitamin B2 can also help if you have an MTHFR. So I might stand to do well taking extra B2, extra riboflavin, that can help reduce blood pressure as well. If you have an MTHFR anomaly, B2 separately can help to lower your blood pressure. So that's nice. And I know I'm getting some in my complex vitamin. So if you're wondering which vitamin tends to turn your pee bright yellow, your urine bright yellow, it is vitamin B2. If you take a vitamin B2 supplement, you're going to have a bright yellow urine, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I have had patients stop taking it because they're concerned about that. It's nothing to be concerned about. There's a metabolite that happens when you take excess vitamin B2, and it comes out chartreuse. It's fine. And so, of course, folate and folate supplements can help lower your blood pressure. And B6, maybe. The research is lacking. Potassium, we talked about that already. So potassium is helpful for blood pressure regulation. And again, it's easy to get more potassium through your food. So you don't necessarily have to take a pill. you're going to get a lot more potassium from a banana than you are from a 99 milligram potassium pill, unless you're getting a pharmaceutically prescribed potassium that's in a bunch of MEQs, which is going to be 500 to 1,000 milligrams of potassium. It's a lot of potassium. So if you're not, if you don't eat your fruits and veggies, then you might want a pharmaceutical supplement of potassium. But if you do, then that's probably all you need to do. If you're eating produce throughout the day, if you're eating your berries and cherries and strawberries and apples and bananas, and you have a big salad with dinner, stir fry, you're having beans and grape leaves for lunch, and or you're having lettuce on your sandwich at lunch, you're probably fine. You probably don't need to take potassium pills. So eating a lot of produce on its own will help you with your blood pressure. Potassium helps you to excrete too much sodium through the urine. So you can have a little bit of salt on your salad if you're not eating a lot of processed food. If you're having a great big salad and you have just a little bit of salt to add taste, that's fine. That's not going to raise your blood pressure. If you're having a lot of processed food and you're not eating a lot of produce, then you're going to tend to have higher blood pressure. So potassium supplements led to a modest but significant drop in blood pressure. And they're safe and effective. I think if you take too much potassium, it's hard to take too much potassium because your body will excrete the extra, but it is possible to have too much potassium. Coenzyme Q10. I take that all the time. CoQ10 is a great supplement. Coenzyme Q10 is responsible for the electron transport chain in all of the cells in your body. If you have inadequate coenzyme Q10, you won't have, you'll be tired because the electron transport chain is like the spark plugs inside the mitochondria, the energy centers of all of the cells in your body. And it's found in some foods. You can take it as a supplement and it may help reduce blood pressure. It is one of the things that I take every day. It can significantly reduce systolic blood pressure. That's the blood pressure on the top. The top number is telling you how much force your heart ejects the blood from the ventricle with each beat. So it can lower your systolic blood pressure. And so there are some mixed studies, and there are some studies that are positive. So it can be helpful. It can also help your energy. Then there's L-arginine. It's amino acid, and it can lower blood pressure when you take it as a supplement. L-arginine, the way it works is it happens to be a nitric oxide enhancer. And when you take L-arginine, it can lower your blood pressure. You have to be careful taking L-arginine because if you have herpes simplex in your body, so sometimes you get cold sores or you get genital herpes outbreaks, arginine will feed those your genital herpes. And you can prevent that. If you need to take arginine for your blood pressure and you want to take it but you have herpes, then you just take lysine, and the lysine will help to keep the herpes from flaring. So that's how you do it. So L-arginine has been studied to help, and they do different things. They give you just L-arginine supplements, or you can take a specialized L-arginine supplements that have enhanced absorbability, and you can also take L-citrulline, and L-citrulline has been shown to increase the L-arginine in your body more than taking L-arginine yourself. And L-citrulline is an amino acid that's in watermelon, because watermelon is citrulless. And so you can eat watermelon, you can drink watermelon juice. You probably won't get as much as if you take the supplement. And what I sometimes will do is I'll take L-citrulline and I'll put it in watermelon juice, and then I'll get a citrulline blast, and it helps you make L-arginine, and you know, can help lower your blood pressure. And it helps to improve your blood vessel function and blood flow, of course, because arginine is a nitric oxide enhancer. Anything that enhances nitric oxide is going to enhance circulation. It's going to make your blood vessels more resilient. And as the blood goes through, it's going to go through in a more laminar way. But that means it's the flow is going to be nice and leveled across each other instead of being turbulent. When you have turbulent blood flow, your blood pressure is going to be higher and you're going to have more damage to your blood vessels. When you have adequate nitric oxide, you have better laminar flow, which is just when you look at the river and the river is just lazily flowing along and nice and happy, and it's not beating against the sides of the of the riverbed. It's just sort of flowing along in a happy, lazy way. That's laminar flow. And turbulent flow is when you have white water. When you go to Diana's pool over here in Chaplin and you see the rapids going over the rocks, that's turbulent flow. Okay. So anyway, anything that enhances nitric oxide increases laminar flow. That's what you want. And L-arginine will do that. L-citrulline will do that. Other stuff with that are nitric oxide enhancers will do that. Vitamin C, lovely water-soluble nutrient that your body needs for all kinds of stuff. People with high blood pressure, you take 300 to 1,000 milligrams a day, significantly reduce their levels. I take at least 1,000 a day. Right now I'm taking 1,000 a day because I'm eating a lot of berries, eating strawberries. I'm eating a lot of produce, so I'm just taking 1,000 right now. I was taking more like 2,000 previously when I, you know, especially in the wintertime, I might take a little bit more, but right now I'm just doing a grand. I like to take vitamin C that also has bioflavonoids in it, and it might have other things like rose hips. So it might have some rutin or hesperidin in it, which are also healing for blood vessels, but vitamin C has been shown to do this, probably mostly because there's a couple ways that vitamin C probably lowers your blood pressure. One of them is to strengthen the integrity of collagen. So it's going to strengthen the integrity of the collagen in your blood vessels, which is going to make your blood vessels more relaxed and resilient. So when you have relaxed, resilient blood vessels, again, you have laminar flow. Vitamin C will also work by reducing inflammation. So if you have less inflammation in your body, inflammation will inflame your blood vessels and they'll be more tense and tight and you'll have turbulent flow. So vitamin C helps with that as well. It helps with all kinds of inflammatory things in your body. Vitamin C stimulates it stimulates your adrenal glands to work. So if your adrenals are working more efficiently, you'll have adrenal hormones when you need them and not when you don't. And so it works that way. So there's a number of ways that vitamin C probably lowers blood pressure. It's a big one is going to be because it helps. So there's two ways it's going to help your collagen. Like I said, it's going to help with the collagen structure directly of your blood vessels. The other thing it's going to do is help with the collagen structure of your muscles, ligaments, tendons. If you have better collagen structure of your muscles, ligaments, and tendons, you're going to have less pain, less arthritis, less inflammation of your bones and joints. So less inflammation, lower blood pressure. So it's not just, so it's indirect, but it's because it's lowering inflammation elsewhere in your body, including in the collagen of your structure, so that you have less inflammation, you're going to have lower blood pressure. Anytime you're stressed, anytime you feel stressed, if your adrenals are kicking out extra cortisol, that's going to tend to raise your blood pressure. All right, then there's beets. Beets are something that's known to lower blood pressure, and I'm having a little bit of beet juice every day right now, which I'm enjoying. Beets are interesting because can you say doctrine of signatures? My goodness. So beets look like little hearts, and when you drink beet juice, it really looks kind of like blood in the bottle. It's kind of freaky. And so I'm drinking this beet juice and pouring it out, and it's a little alarming. And then when you taste it, it doesn't taste like blood at all. It tastes like beets. So beets, by the way, beets do not taste like blood. If you ever, get a cut and you have to lick your finger, blood tastes kind of metallic. You know, I'm not thrilled with consuming blood of any kind, but, you know, if you get a little cut on your finger and your instinct is to put your finger in your mouth, that's actually okay because you have compounds in your saliva that will help to stop the bleeding. So it's okay to do that. You know, you tend to suck it out. You're going to tend to suck out any poisons that are in the finger. Like if you with a paper cut, anything that's going to irritate it, you tend to suck it out. And then the immune system in your saliva, you have immune globulin A that's going to kill anything that you've ingested. But you do have clotting factors in your saliva that help it to stop bleeding. So just so you know that. So beetroot is just incredible. Again, so beets have betalins in it, and betalins are nitric oxide enhancers. So again, calming the blood vessels down, making it so that you have laminar flow, making it so that you're more like a lazy river than you are like whitewater rapids. And so juice is going to work somewhat better than eating the food, although you can totally eat beets. You can eat pickled beets, you can eat steamed beets, you can eat grated beets on your salad. You can eat beets as an ingredient in things. But when you drink the juice, it's just more concentrated. So you're going to just get more nitric oxide benefit from beet juice. All right, garlic. I am very sad because garlic makes me, it gives me a tummy ache. And the nice guy from one of the, he wanted to give me nitric oxide strips that I would put in my mouth after taking their black garlic supplement. And black garlic has been shown to help to lower blood pressure. And I can't do it because garlic makes me ill. So I can't do onions and garlic. I can do them if they're cooked to death, but I can't do... I've tried to do garlic supplements before, but it gives me a stomach ache and I taste garlic all day. So I just can't do it. But if you can eat garlic, bless you, because it's really helpful for your blood pressure. So you can add garlic as a supplement to your routine. You can take, because you can get high-dose garlic. You can get 5,000 micrograms of allicin, which is the extract of garlic. Garlic is... garlic is Allium sativa, and garlic can help to lower blood pressure. And it can reduce both your systolic and diastolic blood pressure, and also can decrease your risk of stroke. So I can do a bit of garlic as a seasoning if it's dehydrated and cooked down. So I do some of that, and that's all I'm really able to do. I seem to be able to do it when it's an ingredient in hummus as well. But to eat straight up garlic, like saute garlic into my stir fry, or I just can't do it. It's so unfortunate. But if you can, it's a good idea to do it. You can try it because it can be really helpful for lowering your blood pressure. Then there's fish oil. It can do so many things. It can help to reduce your blood lipid levels, reduce inflammation, reduce your blood pressure. And if you have high blood pressure, you might benefit from high-dose fish oil. This may be why I couldn't take the blood pressure pills, because I'm already taking a lot of things that lower blood pressure, including fish oil. Probiotics are also helpful, too. But let's get back to the fish oil. There was a study where people who took omega-3 fatty acids that contain EPA and DHA, including fish oil supplements, led to significant reductions in their blood pressure. And there is some research that notes that higher levels of omega-3s may protect against high blood pressure. Great stuff. Okay, getting to probiotics. I think probiotics is where we're going to leave off, and then we'll pick up with melatonin next week. Probiotics are beneficial bacteria. They're found in your digestive system. They're also found in your respiratory system and any parts of your body that communicate with the outside world. Multi-strain probiotics can help to lower your blood pressure. So if you've been taking them for 8 weeks long or longer, that's, again, I take probiotics. I'm taking a probiotic pill, and I also drink, I drink aqua kefir, and I drink cashew coconut kefir. So I'm getting a lot of probiotic on board, and sometimes I eat fermented foods too. So probiotic supplements significantly can help reduce blood pressure in people with high levels compared with controls. That's great. All right, I talked my face off. That's great. We'll start with melatonin next week and how it helps with blood pressure. So that's good. All right, so I'm going to sign off now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am France Dorch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episodes at France Dorch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.